Min campus al ieħor. Miegħi Karsten Xwiene. Nilqakom għal-raba program fit-tieni sensiela tas-serje minn Campus għal-ieħor miegħi Karsten Xwiene f'hawnhekk fuq Campus FM. Kif draw is-semmija ta' dan il-programm jew direttament fuq ir-radju jew anke permezz tal-podcasts. Kull ġimgħa niltaqa' ma' mistieden jew mistiedna li b'xi mod duru madwar id-dinja tal-universitajiet. F'Malta, barra minn Malta, kemm fl-Ewropa kif ukoll f'inħawi oħra tad-dinja. Ċertu drabi l-mistiedna jkunu Maltin li jgħixu barra minn Malta li jkunu żviluppaw il-karriera tagħhom permezz ta' vjaġġar, ta' xogħol, ta' responsabbiltajiet differenti u fil-fatt il-mistieden tal-lum li huwa Dr. Aldo Zammilborda propju jilħaq dan it-tip ta' profil. Bħalissa għandu reader fil-liġi City University Londra, qabel kien direttur taċ-ċentru tal-aċċess għall-ġustizzja u l-inklużjoni Anglia University, Anglia Ruskin University ġewwa Cambridge, fejn niftakar li xorti anke niltaqa' ftit miegħu hemmhekk qabel iżmin il-pandemija. Ir-riċerka tiegħu tafas fuq il-ġustizzja kriminali internazzjonali u ktieb li ħareġ fl-2020 tiegħu li ħares lej l-istejjer tal-rati internazzjonali li ħarsu lej liġi kriminali u anki tribunali kien maħruġ minn Springer u TMC Esser. Dal-ktieb irċieva ħafna kummenti pożittivi mill-kollegi tiegħu, minn nies il-li huma esperti ta' dan il-qasam, għax fil-fatt jidħol fid-dettal dwar mhux biss affarijiet tekniċi, imma kif ħa nisimgħu direttament minn Aldo Zammilborda matul din intervista anki permezz ta' narrattiva li fil-fatt hija importanti meta wieħed jipprova jidħol mhux biss minn lat tekniku imma anki minn lati iktar personali, soċjali, u anke storiċi biex wieħed jipprova jifhem iktar x'huma l-isfondi ta' ċertu żviluppi. Fil-fatt kummentarju li sibt online proprju fuq is-sit ta' City University ta' Londra faħħar dan il-xogħol għaliex iħares lej il-momenti tal-qof dawk il-momenti fejn jiltaqgħu il-verità storika immanki il-kunċett ta' trial truth, il-verità li tgħaddi minn dawn il-proċessi legali. Qabel ma daħħal fid-dinja akkademika kif ħa nisimgħu anke direttament minn Aldo Zammilborda stess, Aldo kien jaħdem mill-Ministeru tal-Affarijiet Barranin, kien l-ewwel segretarju hemmhekk, aktar tard kien ħaddem ukoll ma' segretarjat tal-Commonwealth. Fil-fatt hemmhekk kif għajadinna ħafna esperjenzi marbutin mal-xibka globali tal-Commonwealth għal-numru ta' snin, hemmhekk kien jaħdem bħala editur legali ta' pubblikazzjonijiet tal-assoċjazzjoni. U ftit wara kien ukoll research associate ġewwa King's College London, fejn fil-fatt kien ipparteċipa u anki responsabbli ta' ħafna aspetti ta' proġett Ewropew dwar il-ġlieda internazzjonali kontra il-terrorizmu. Il-dottorat ta' Aldo inkiseb minn Trinity College Dublin, niftakar dak iż-żmien ukoll kont tinqatta' ftit snin bejn l-Ingilterra u l-Belġju, niftakar ġieli konna niltaqgħu wkoll niskambjaw ftit aneddoti u stejjer. Il-dottorat fil-liġi huwa mill-Università ta' Malta u kien ukoll kiseb Masters fi Xjenza Ekonomika u fi ħwejjeġ Ewropej mill-University College ta' Dublin. kif mu kena mela anki ċertu żmien l-Irlanda qabel ma mbagħad nexra għar-Renju Unit preċiżament ġewwa l-Ingilterra. Ippubblika ħafna xogħol, apparti l-ktieb li semmejt qabel, huwa xi ħadd ukoll li editja ħafna xogħol u ppubblika ħafna xogħol għal oħrajn u kif ħajgħidilna wkoll rebaħ numru ta' premijiet u ta' onuri u anki grants illi ippermettewlu ikompli jistudja u jitħarreġ fid-dinja illi ħajdiskrivilna b'mod interessanti huwa stess. Huwa kien qatta wkoll fellowship kif ħajgħidilna dalwaqt fil-Max Planck Institute għal-liġi komparattiva ġewwa Heidelberg. Qabel ma nisimgħu l-intervista ma' Elvisa Mid-Borda, nerġa' nirringrazzja lil Arc Consultancy kif ukoll qagħdi toħra bħal Orkestra Filarmonika ta' Malta u l-Kunsill Malti għall-Arti tal-mużika illi qed jipprovdu għal matul dawn il-programmi f'dawn is-sensijiet ta' minn kampus għal ieħor il-proġett Medinea illi iżomna għaddejjin din il-mużika Mediterranja. Welcome back, all our listeners, on this program of the series Min Campus Al Ieħor, our fourth one in the second series. As listeners maybe of the first series have gotten used to the whole structure, it's fairly simple, conversation with someone who's based or somehow revolving around a campus or various campuses, as is the case with many of my guests on the show, be they professors or students or maybe more in the field of publishing or research. And usually there's also a good dose of travel, which COVID permitting and other restrictions permitting allows the development of the career path of my guest to progress also in terms of space and not only time. And I think my guest today, as our listeners would have heard from the introduction in Maltese, as usual, Aldo Zamidborda. Hello, Aldo. Welcome to the show.
Hello, Carsten. Thanks for the invitation and thanks for the opportunity to speak with our listeners.
I think, if I can say this, sort of put it this way, you really fit the bill of an ideal guest on this show because you've really done a lot. Traveled a lot in times when travel was even more possible. I know you also like traveling even for leisure, not only for work, so maybe we'll have time. We can touch upon a little bit that as well. Another connection I'd like to stress is the Maltese one. Most of the guests on the show are from wherever, from all over the world, many from Europe. A few are Maltese, and it's always interesting so to share maybe even with our listeners, even to the feedback they give us on Campus FM, a bit of their experiences, a bit of their reactions to the experiences of Maltese nationals abroad who travel, work, and develop their professional careers in various walks of life and fields of competence. In your case, Aldo, sort of the main branch which will follow is the one of law and your legal profession. However, as other guests who are lawyers who have been on the show earlier, it seems this is really coming through that law may be one of those professions which really acts as a springboard to development of one's interests. So maybe yes, the legal profession remains at the core, but there are areas of language, of history, of human dynamics, which really stem from maybe one's traditional perception of what studying law may lead to later on in life. And maybe like everyone else on the guest, my first question on the show, my first question to you would be, where would you sort of locate your early interest in pursuing not only legal studies, but studies in general? It's not everyone who sort of starts off and says, This is something academia, studying, writing, reading, attending conferences, seminars. I know there's the diplomacy connection as well, which we might have time to mention. So where, in your case, would you say this started off?
Thanks, Karsten. It's hard to pinpoint a precise point in time, but I think two thoughts come to mind immediately. The first is that law is a tool and has always been a tool rather than an end in itself, and it is there for society, and therefore it's important to know all aspects of society, as you were mentioning, you know, the social, political, religious aspects of society as well, to understand how law fits in there. And the second thought is that for me, law started off as a backup option, as a plan C or D. in fact, you know, we first met, our paths first crossed at a time when, true, I was reading law at the University of Malta, but also writing a few songs and doing some singing, songwriting in various venues. And that was, you know, initially the hope was that that would develop. It did not in the end, and I we can come to why. But so started off, it did, you know, singing, performing in front of an audience, as you and other lecturers know, however, you know, gives you skills that are invaluable even when you come then, you know, in front of students and academia. Yeah.
This is an interesting point, Aldo, I guess, even for our listeners, maybe especially the younger ones, but anyone really who's maybe even considering career changes or developments, opportunities in the performing arts, in singing, songwriting, in performance, maybe on the media as well, are useful later on in life.
Absolutely, yes. And, you know, the practice of law, a large chunk of it is performance, is drama, both the advocacy part and various other aspects. So, you know, I think this is a recurring theme. I think no experience in life, even if it appears to be completely unrelated to what you go on to do, is useless. It gives you some skills or some knowledge that can come in handy later on in life. At least that's what I, you know, find out and discover on a regular basis in my life.
Maybe it's not always a case of thinking of sort of Hollywood drama. Or I remember even my sister, who's a lawyer, I think was somehow struck by the figure of Atticus in To Kill a Mockingbird. Maybe it's not always like that. Life is not always like that. But there is something interesting there in what you said about possibly having this stage element, this performance element, which did attract you, and maybe law being a fallback plan. Somehow, however, it came in very, very handy.
It did. And, you know, just to give you another example, a small one, during my studies at university, there were times where I took part-time jobs up, like waiting in a restaurant during the summer. And, you know, you can say that has absolutely nothing to do with the practice of law, like how are the two related? Mm-hmm. But, you know, I doing that kind of role, I got to know a lot about wine. I got to know a lot about food, and I got to know a lot about engaging with customers. And all of those three skills, particularly perhaps the knowledge of wine, came in useful when one practices law.
Very, very useful indeed. Aldo, it's an interesting and also quite different start to this program. And it's interesting how even from the basic levels, you've, however, seen that maybe there are elements which stay with us and which grow as well. And after all, law, but also other career paths are person-oriented, are people-oriented, and one needs to develop also those skills. In your case, as you said, we met at sixth form and then kept in touch since university. Days with various activities. I remember at some point also being involved with Literature Festival and with a few gigs. So that always sort of kept your development going, even in the public sphere. In your case, you also moved on further then, even sort of academically and work-wise, because without wanting to jump the gun, you did follow your studies at the University of Malta, where our own radio station is based, with sort of, I don't know if you would call it a sidestep, sort of away from academia directly and into the world of professional engagement, also on an international dimension, with your work at the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and later even related to the Commonwealth Secretariat. Can you tell us something about that? If it was maybe looking back, if it was a passage or maybe you saw your career developing in that line?
I guess looking back, one could look at it as a sidestep, moving from university, graduating with a law degree and then moving into diplomacy at the Ministry of Foreign Affairs of Malta. At the time, and to some extent now, I'm not the kind of person who has sort of 10-year plan. I do something until I feel I am learning and I'm contributing something. And when I feel I am not learning anymore or not contributing, then I think I'm ready for my next endeavor. So at the time, this was 2003, I joined the Ministry of Foreign Affairs of Malta when we were joining the European Union, the last phase in that process. And it was extremely interesting. I was landed a desk that I had, I knew the general law, but not the specific subject. And this was agriculture and fisheries, which was at the time the largest chapter of the European Union acquis communautaire. And I learned so much. I learned so much about animal health and welfare. I learned so much about plant health and fisheries. And, occasionally that knowledge comes in handy, even today that I deal with completely different subjects. But I guess the broader point here is that, someone studying law might think, I'll graduate and practice law in the traditional sense. But I used my degree to join the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. It was extremely interesting for me, and of course that again it chimed with my love of travel, because of course in diplomacy you by definition it is about creating relationships with other countries and travel. So that I think it was a formative step in my career, which I found really really interesting.
Yes. Not a coincidence, that's the word which struck me as well when you mentioned even the period of Malta preparing to join the EU, formative, because I think maybe like many other listeners, possibly of our age, so we're saying, without going into too much detail, early 40s, we've had that experience, which looking back was a defining experience of a few years where so much work was done. And we will learn so much as well in going through that passage.
Indeed. And of course, residing in the UK for some time, one has seen the opposite trend now of Brexit and moving away from the UK. And I won't enter into the politics of that. But for some, I could observe what was happening with a particular perspective, having seen a country enter the European Union, and now a country, in this case the UK, leave it.
Yes. I don't want to sort of go into another sidestep this time in terms of the discussion, but it's a question which is interesting. I guess our listeners are asking themselves that. They might be asking this question themselves, and it's too good to let pass, sort of. But with hindsight now of about 15 years, so a decade and a half since Malta joined the European Union, and the European Union having changed itself so much in this decade and a half. So it's not like having joined something which remains static, but so much has changed. From your perspective, which is a very international one, but as you said, very closely related to affairs in the UK. Do you see from your perspective anything in particular which is sort of worth flagging, even for maybe our listeners, even in terms of students, for example, seeking to, so I don't want to go into sort of agony aunt and advice corner, but anything worth sharing?
So if I understand the question, it's about sort of Malta's membership of the European Union?
Exactly. And looking back now, so 15 years later, vis-a-vis also the UK, such a close partner, at least in terms of business and culture of Malta, which went, as you said, the other way.
Yes, and of course, I wouldn't like to enter sort of political polemics. And the European Union as an organization is by no means perfect. It's got a number of flaws, undoubtedly. However, one of the strengths that I see coming from my diplomacy background, so I won't be commenting on, you know, any economic strengths or other aspects that I haven't got specific knowledge on. But given my diplomatic background, one of the strengths of the European Union is it brings together 27 now states to debate on issues of common concern on a regular basis, and in a way that if it did not exist, many of these states would not be debating together. So, okay, you know, Malta had a pre-existing relationship with Italy, with the United Kingdom, you know, those kind of bilateral debates would have gone on. But, you know, speaking to Latvia or the Baltic states, mm-hmm. or indeed some of the Central European states, what mm-hmm. interests would they have to speak to Malta and vice versa?
Yes.
Yet when it happens and when it is done in an institutionalized and structured way, the way the European Union allows it to be done, you know, new opportunities, new potential areas of engagement and collaboration arise, which I think from a diplomatic perspective, is one of the huge benefits mm-hmm. of an organization like you. As I say, it is not perfect by any means, and it's got a number of defects, but
yes.
I think that's one of its main strengths.
Mm-hmm. Aldo, before we come to the first break in our conversation, maybe we can just touch upon your, in a way, chronologically next step, which was your traveling to another country, this time back to the EU in a way, Dublin, where you obtained your PhD from Trinity College. Could you tell us something about that experience, how that came about? Maybe again, even keeping our listeners in mind, sort of the importance of maybe looking for opportunities and also being open to them happening and saying yes.
Thanks for that. And the opportunity to go to study in Dublin very much was the second, being open two opportunities. You know, I chanced upon an advert one day about a scholarship being offered by the government of Ireland. This was when the Celtic Tiger was still roaring. I started off with a master's of European and economic studies in Dublin. And this was open for newly acceded EU member states. And I stress that because it was a class of about 20, 10 of which were the newly acceded member states, and one of which will turn out to be my future wife, because we met in that context. So you know, I got that opportunity, the scholarship, did a year at this Masters of Economic Science, went back to the ministry, and then some years later, because I had, you know, grown to love Ireland, really, I was fortunate enough to get another scholarship to do a PhD, this time at Trinity College, yes, as you mentioned, mm-hmm. London, Dublin, yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll get to London and also your current place in Cambridge in a while. But let's catch our breath a moment, Aldo, and go back maybe in a way to your first love, as you yourself described, which is music. Will you help introduce this first track of the two we'll be listening during this program?
Yes, this may come out as a bit of a surprise to many listeners because, especially if you're expecting something a bit light and mellow. So the first song I would bring forward is actually Iron Maiden's Run to the Hills.
Oh, wow. it comes as a surprise to me.
There are various reasons for this, though, Carsten. So when I was younger, much younger, in fact, I was a bit of a metalhead, and I used to enjoy various rock and heavy metal music, including Iron Maiden. And I had gone to see them perform live twice in Malta, once in Malta, once in Gozo. But at the time, you know, I just listened to the songs without really paying attention, too much attention to the lyrics, and just listened to the sort of heavy music. However, in as we will come to at the later in this program, I later began specializing and researching in the area of crime of genocide, mass atrocities. And this song, for example, Run to the Hills, refers to the mass atrocities committed by Westerners, imperialists against indigenous populations, in this case, in the Americas. And it struck me as interesting how sort of I had in my youth enjoyed the song, which had a message which I would only take up very much later in my life. So that's the reason I chose this as the first track.
Very interesting, Aldo, very interesting book, and little did you know what you would see once you yourself went up your own paths and hills. So let's listen to this.
White man came across the sea. He brought us pain and misery. He killed our tribes. He killed our creed. He took our game for his own need. We fought him hard. We fought him well. Out on the plains, we gave him hell. But when it came to much decree, oh, will we ever be set free?
We're back to Mein Kampus. Today my guest is Aldo Zamit Borda, something maybe which isn't very common. We were joking during the track, Aldo and I, on the airwaves of Campus FM, but it's good to shake things up a bit. And in your case, Aldo, it was really interesting to see how, and this might be true of many of us, we're exposed to things without maybe being fully aware of what they're saying or where they might lead us. And then maybe even develop our own careers and our own further interests related to those topics. And in your case, as you have already hinted, your next moves in life, professionally and obviously also personally speaking, took you to the UK with roles in London, in Cambridge. I don't want to sort of skip too much. So maybe you could tell us a little bit what led you there, what you did there, and because this program looks very much at the research as well of the guests on the show, maybe you could tell us a little bit about a bit more about this particular dimension you looked at from a legal perspective.
Yes, and I apologize for any listeners who found the song a little bit too heavy for their ears. But so after working at the Ministry of Foreign Affairs of Malta, I moved to London to work for the Commonwealth Secretariat, housed in a beautiful palace, Marlborough Palace. And there I was attached with the Legal and Constitutional Affairs Division of the Commonwealth Secretariat. And essentially what we did, the Secretariat facilitates cooperation between the various Commonwealth member states, in my case, of course, legal cooperation. And one of the jobs I had included facilitating model laws for the International Criminal Court, which, as you know, is based in The Hague and whose jurisdiction relates to international crimes, genocide, crimes against humanity, and war crime. So that is, in a way, where my interest in this particular area of the law developed and where I started learning more about these international crimes and the impact they have on different populations around the world. And it's also where I think the idea of doing a PhD arose for me. Because I felt that I didn't know enough and that I needed to learn more about this particular area. So I then went on to do a PhD on this subject, as we mentioned earlier, at Trinity College Dublin. And after gaining that PhD, I decided, therefore, to make the switch and to move into academia. Mm-hmm. And many people ask me sort of, you know, why did you make that move? A job at the Commonwealth Secretariat or indeed in diplomacy is a good job. Why would you want to become an academic? Mm-hmm. And I absolutely would agree that they both are very, very good jobs. Both have, you know, extremely interesting prospects.
That's right.
However, for me, as someone who likes to write, likes to publish, and likes to speak my mind, if you will, academia gave me more of that opportunity. As you know, when you work in government or indeed in international organizations, you are very much required to stick to the party line, so to speak.
Yes, yes.
And not deviate too much. So I moved into academia. I started with a smaller university here in the UK called Anglia Ruskin, based in Cambridge, where I began teaching various parts of law, including European law, but also public international law. So that's essentially how I did that switch. I'm not sure. Yes.
Yes. And what was I going to mention before asking you a little bit more even about your recent research publications and even your current work? Because there's also a publication of journal articles and papers, but also books you've edited and also published. I wanted to just pick on something you said about choosing to do a PhD, because I think you put it this way, because sort of you understood that you didn't know about that subject enough as much as you wanted to, and reading for a PhD was the right thing to do, the best thing you could do at that point in time in order to learn more about it. And I think not everyone looks at it that way. I mean, the way you look at it is very very, very logical, and also helps one fulfill one's, as you put it very well at the beginning, your curiosity, your interest, your wish, your thirst to learn more. Sometimes you get the feeling that some people might think that pursuing a PhD puts a cap on what they're doing, allows them to reach the maximum position. Whereas the way you put it, and I guess it would be interesting even for listeners and students to consider, that it's really a way to learn more, which is absolutely then not an end, but a stepping stone to further learning.
Agreed. It is far from being an end. It is, as I often, because I then went on to supervise a number of PhDs myself, Carsten, it is very much a beginning. And what I would say on that is, yes, I mean, there could be several reasons for which a person decides to begin a PhD, but it is a very long journey, you know, 3, sometimes 4 years. Sometimes longer, depending on how you're doing it, and it's a journey full of ups and downs. You know, it has those moments of elation when, for example, one of your articles is published, or indeed you do well in a particular examination. But mm-hmm. there are many moments of downs when your draft comes back full of crosses and corrections I think, particularly in those moments of downs, unless you have a genuine and strong interest in the mm-hmm. subject you are researching, it is going to be very, very hard to pull through and to keep, you know, going at this. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think that it's really important that, you know, you can start fine. You can do a PhD for various different reasons, but one of them absolutely should be a genuine, strong interest in the area you're researching.
Aldo, just again another deviation, because there's so much which is coming up as we speak. It'd be really a shame to let these questions just pass us by. But one quick question I would like to ask is exactly on what you're saying, sort of how does one approach research in the short term and in the long term? So something which I often hear from colleagues, from professionals, is that, yes, maybe even as young people pursuing our studies, we get used to sort of studying very short-term subjects or topics, having exams, maybe doing well, and therefore getting our sort of confidence as well boosted. But it's all mostly very short-term, unless maybe one arrives to the point of writing a long essay, a dissertation, or a thesis, therefore even with MA and PhD studies. But in the case of taking on an area of research because one has a genuine interest, as you very, very correctly put it, so that goes beyond the paper or the collection of papers or, say, the PhD in itself. So one needs to go beyond. And you made me recall this particular perspective.
I agreed. Yes, absolutely. And I mean, if we go back to law, which is my subject, and as I began, law is a tool, and a tool can be both a useful tool in the right circumstances and a non-useful tool, or indeed a problematic tool in some circumstances. Therefore, you need to approach the subject, whichever branch of law you decide to analyze or to study, with an open but a critical and a interested, curious, as you put it, mind, to discover, you know, the strengths and weaknesses and analyze this tool in which is not something you can do if, of course, you are merely doing this to pass your exams and get the grades.
Yes,
so to speak.
Yes. Aldo, there's the point about recent and current research, and also tools that you have taken on to enable you to achieve what you have achieved in the last few years. Let's, however, again listen to a short musical break before we come to the last part of our conversation and round things up a bit. So what will the second piece of music be?
So the second piece of music is now Bob Dylan. And the song I've chosen is The Lonesome Death of Hattie Carroll. And this ties in, the reason I chose this song ties in very closely to what we have been saying a moment ago. I normally play this song to my first year LLB students in one of the first sessions of law, because many law students come with the view of having a perhaps unhealthy faith or regard for the law. Yes, the law is absolutely really, really helpful and useful in when it works and in good circumstances, but it also has various weaknesses and flaws. And The Lonesome Death of Hattie Carroll identifies one of this the flaws with law and justice, where you have a, you know, a vulnerable individual, we can say this in this case, Hattie Carroll, who does her work diligently well. On the other hand, we have Zarzinger, a privileged individual who, as the song goes, you know, strikes her and causes her death. This is based on a news article that was happened contemporaneously when Bob Dylan wrote this song. So you have this song about how justice doesn't always, you know, is not necessarily equal for everyone all the time, but maybe privileged particular individuals. And as lawyers, I think we have to be critical about these situations and we have to call them out and hopefully try to improve them. So this is the reason why I chose this particular song. Also because I had the opportunity to listen to Bob Dylan live at 2 years ago, just before coronavirus struck, which was a lovely occasion.
So worth listening to now again. Thank you.
Williams and Zinger killed poor Hattie Carroll with a cane that he twirled around his diamond ring finger at a Baltimore hotel society gathering. Then the cops was called in and his weapon took from him as they rode him in custody down to the station and booked Williams and Zinger for first-degree murder. But you who philosophize disgrace and criticize all fears, take the rag away from your face. Now ain't the time for your tears. Williams and Zinger, who had 24 years, owns a tobacco farm of 600 acres with rich, wealthy parents who provide and protect him, and high office relations in the politics of Maryland reacted to his deed with a shrug of his shoulders and swear words and sneering, and his tongue it was a snarling. And in a matter of minutes, on bail was out walking. But you who philosophize disgrace and criticize fears, take the rag away from your face. Now ain't the time for your tears. Hattie Carroll was a maid in the kitchen. She was 51 years old and gave birth to 10 children who carried the dishes and took out the garbage and never sat once at the head of the table and didn't even talk to the people at the table who just cleaned up all the food from the table and emptied the ashtrays on a whole other level. Got killed by a blow, lay slain by a cane that sailed through the air and came down.
So welcome back to the last part of today's program in Campus Alihor here on Campus FM. with me, Karsten. We have my guest today is Aldo Zammit Borda. Aldo, great choice again for the music. Great to listen to tracks by Bob Dylan, especially when there are these stories behind them, which link and relate to us and our pursuits. We're in the last 10 minutes or so. So at this point, I would ask you a little bit to share with us your experience in publishing your book in 2020. So it will be last year in terms of when this program is being recorded, at the end of 2021. Were you looking at the histories, or various histories, in international criminal courts and tribunals, and how a journal like the Leiden Journal of International Law described it as nuanced, novel, a practical analysis of linking theory and case law in something which is very, very accessible, which I guess is really important in your line, in your field. However, I'm also aware that over that period of time, you also enjoyed a particular fellowship as a visiting scholar at the Max Planck Institute for Comparative Public Law and International Law in Heidelberg. So maybe in these last few minutes, if you could share those experiences with our listeners, I guess it would be really interesting.
Yes, with pleasure. The idea behind this book you mentioned, which looks at histories written by international criminal courts and tribunals, came from a chapter that I was invited to contribute on in a previous volume. And this volume related to a legacy of one such tribunal. This was the Tribunal for Former Yugoslavia, on which, as your listeners will know, we have a Maltese judge sitting, Judge Carmela Jus. Of course, that tribunal has now closed down, and the volume was set to look at what legacies it had left behind. And one of them were its historical legacies, how histories of the conflict were written by the tribunal. And I co-authored that chapter. And the more we wrote, of course, you know, a chapter is around 20, 25 pages. The more I realized that unanswered questions kept arising. And that is what instigated, if you will, me to look further into this and ultimately to decide to write a book length manuscript on this particular subject. Which, as you mentioned, was well received, including by the Leiden Journal of International Law. I finished writing that book. I had, the opportunity to finish writing it in Heidelberg, as you mentioned, as a visiting scholar at the Max Planck Institute, which I think for me was an extremely valuable experience. It was, for various reasons. First of all, the atmosphere and the intellectual engagement in the Max Planck Institute was extremely inspirational for me, which really helps when you're writing. But also simply the fact that I was getting out of my usual environment and moving into Heidelberg for a couple of weeks, into an entirely new environment. Those who have visited know it's a lovely, lovely environment. It was very helpful for me to get those ideas and that inspiration to write. So, I would thoroughly recommend it. And I think it helps, CVs also, especially if you have listeners looking at how to enhance your career in CV. Mm-hmm. I think it does help. To if you're able to look out for these opportunities, then I would thoroughly recommend. And I would say shortly after publishing this book, I then moved to City University of London, where I now teach international criminal law and public international law as a reader at City University.
Yes, in fact, towards the end of our conversation, which was really interesting, Aldo, but we still got a bit of time maybe to look a bit around us and also ahead at maybe what else you might be heading towards yourself, your colleagues, your peers, even your students. One thing I just want to mention very briefly, together with your current position at the University of London, you sort of, my impression is that you also never shied away from, for example, a role like director of the Center for Access to Justice and Inclusion at Anglia Ruskin University, and other roles which, as we know in academia, not only, but also in academia, demand a certain administrative competence and time dedicated to administration. Colleagues maybe who are listening to us will maybe sigh a moment at this point and then say, yes, sort of, there is that much that has to be done. So maybe to try to bring the loose ends together within your field and within also your own career, is it very, very hard really to try to sort of keep a balance between wanting to pursue and succeed in pursuing the academic perspective while keeping also in mind that one, as you very rightly put it at the very beginning, practices one's particular profession, in your case law, not only as a service to others, but in a community with others, which means there is the teaching element, there is the publishing element, there is the administrative element as well. How do you see yourself over the next maybe few years? I know you said you're not the one to sort of go into 5-year or 10-year plans, but what do you see happening in the future, even within the field in general?
I think at least in the past, I have always taken a slightly longer view on these things. So you did say there's the teaching, there's the research, and there's the administrative aspect of the role. And while naturally I move more towards the research part, although I enjoy the teaching, the three I think are important, and the three give you different kinds of skills. You know, teaching is different from research, is different from administration, and they don't always need to be done all the time at the same time. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, when I took on various administrative roles, including as director of the Center for Access to Justice at Anglia Ruskin, but also as acting, I was head of school for just over a year. I didn't do much research in that year, I can assure you. Mm-hmm. And nor, in fairness, nor did I do much teaching. I did some, but not. The main focus was running the department. And you know, the insights and the board you sit on and the insights you get are invaluable. Mm-hmm. They are not insights you get if you just do research, for instance. It is to some extent a different world. So the view I take is that yes, absolutely, teaching, research, and administration has to be done, but they don't always have to be done in the same proportion every year. They, you know, sometimes research can take priority and on other times it could be administration. They're valuable for various reasons in and on themselves.
That's really interesting because it brings to mind what sometimes some colleagues say, I'm sure colleagues of yours as well, that doing sort of all three at the same time sometimes is very taxing just because you need to shift too quickly, too suddenly between roles and maybe a longer term perspective, as you yourself have said, you tend to take maybe more beneficial in the long term. In our case, time is not on our side in this type of format of conversation, but we've got a couple of minutes left. So maybe if we just had to go back to my question about what next, which is something I always ask my guests, for yourself and for people in your sector, what could you say?
So for myself, my research will now be looking at informal modes of justice. Having explored formal modes of justice, always in the area of international criminal law, such as international tribunals or internationalized tribunals, I found that while they are effective when they act, there are many gaps in the system. And sometimes these gaps have to be filled by more informal mechanisms, such as, for example, people's tribunals. And I plan to focus on that particular aspect. You know, of course, with respect to the broader environment, if you will, For example, in the area, again, where I operate, international criminal law, criminal justice, while in the early 2000s, it was hailed to be the era of accountability we have today, the era of anti-impunity. Unfortunately, today we still see several conflicts, several cases of mass, violations happening that are not brought to any form of justice. And therefore, again, that critical mind about discussing the law, both for its strengths, but also for its deficiencies and its weaknesses, and seeing how one could improve the current system, I think is an important aspect.
Aldo, I thank you very much for sharing those perspectives with me and with all of our listeners here on Campus FM today, because I think you managed to provide us a practical approach to something which, in terms of time, needs a lot of time and energy and effort invested into it in terms of a professional career in academia, which is, however, also very fulfilling if one gives it one's all. And you also said sort of at the beginning, being open to opportunities that might arise along the way. So I thank you very much, Aldo.
Thank you for the invitation. Thanks to your listeners, Carsten.
Nispera li dik l-intervista tal-lum Dr. Aldo Zamil Borda minn City University Londra fost ruoli u xogħlijiet oħra li jagħmel kien jagħmel. Uġbitkom, jekk dan huwa każ ħajjarkom terġa' tingħaqdu miegħi għal programmi oħra fi sensiela minn kampus ieħor fejn kull ġimgħa dejjem niltaqgħu ma' nies Maltin barranin li jaqsmu magħna l-esperjenzi tagħhom fl-iżvilupp tal-karriera immanki tal-ħajja tagħhom fid-dinja marbuta ma' dik. Tad-dinja akademika. Saħiħ.